In today's episode, we're talking about perfectionism and the lessons that I needed to learn and what I had to do to be able to get out of the clutches and on a different path. And also, there's four things that we need to think about because it determines which way we're going to go when we come up against pain, obstacles, and hard things. Hi, I'm Carrie, and you're listening to I Meant to Do That, the podcast that brings you breakthrough strategies to help you live and lead authentically. Hey, friends, welcome back to another episode of I Meant to Do That. I hope you're doing great. I hope you're doing things that you mean to do and not too many things that you don't mean to do, but it happens. It happens to me every day. Today I was driving on the way to get my son to drums. I'm driving along and I'm trying to merge into the right lane because my turn is coming up. I put on my blinkers. The first person won't let me in. The second person won't let me in. Everybody knows there's an exit coming up. So obviously, I'm wanting to get into that lane for a reason. And I'm inching in. The traffic starts to slow down. There's definitely a decent gap. But this car behind me is not having it. They're not going to let me in. They want to tease me and leave a gap, but then make sure I can't get all the way in. Well, listen, I lived in Pennsylvania. I've lived in Chicago. I know how to drive. I'm gonna get in that lane. And so it was very safe. She saw me, completely saw me. I just kept slowly inching my way in and she laid on her horn. Like, okay, she laid on her horn. She's yelling at me. I've still just proceeded to safely make my lane change. And the traffic was literally going 3 miles an hour. 3 miles an hour. I meant to make this lane change and I did. And then once I got in and we're inching along so I can take my exit onto an on-ramp, she's like yelling the whole time. I look in the rearview mirror. She looks like she's probably 70 years old. And I'm thinking, do you not have anything better to do with yourself than to major overreact to me making a very safe, purposeful lane change? I guess not. She was having none of it. So that was fun. But I kept my calm. I kept my calm because she can do whatever she wants to do in her car. I'm just going to be me. So there you go. So why is it that some people aren't going to let you in the lane and they're going to lay on the horn and they're going to speak loudly in an enclosed car at you for minutes, and some people aren't going to do that? Why do we react to our problems the way that we do? That's the big question. And maybe not even the why, but what can we do differently? What isn't working for us? What isn't working and what could work better? That's what I want more of. I don't want to be the 72-year-old that's having a tantrum in her car. I don't want to be that person. So over the past 10 years, I feel like it's been an explosion of life lessons for me and things that I was forced to learn because I was spinning my wheels in a lot of ways, in a lot of relationships and the intentional goals that, you know, the things that I wanted to do. I was continuing to do things in a way that I felt like I'm running in a hamster wheel and I'm not getting myself where I want to go. And it became much more evident the older I got. And then the hamster wheel, somehow it hit a wall. I don't know how that happens. But then I was forced to really see what I hadn't been seeing. And so for 10 years, I started gathering new perspectives and reading and learning and taking classes, watching YouTube videos. That's free education out there, people. And so this episode has more, I don't know, it's more personal to me. And I really enjoyed thinking through and taking notes on this one because I just felt so much gratitude in my heart that I was able to glean these things from wiser people and make it my own, and also now enjoy who I am and enjoy how I do things so much better. And of course, like everyone, I'm still learning and I'm still growing. I'm just very grateful to be where I am now. Well, we'll get started. I want to begin with talking about one of my favorite movies, The Princess Bride. It was released in 1987, and that blows my mind because 1987 was 36 years ago. 36 years. I was 17 years old. The distance in time from today to when I was 17 is the same distance in time from when I was 17 to 1950. Does that blow your mind? Come on, Gen Xers, does that just blow your mind? Okay, so it was 1987. I'm 17 years old. I was so excited. Me and my friend were meeting at the movie theater and we're going to go see it together. And we had been anticipating it. And the best part was that they rated the movie PG. What a relief. If it would not have been PG and it would have been PG-13, I probably would not have been able to see it. I grew up in a strict home, and especially with movies and music, it was pretty strict. I would have had to proven my case to be able to see it at PG-13. And fun fact, PG-13 was introduced in 1984. So if you're pretty young out there and you thought there's always been PG-13, no, not the case. Okay, well, I don't even have to explain the movie to you. It is a classic. We have Princess Buttercup and we have Wesley, and it's an epic love story, although I always felt like Wesley could do better than Princess Buttercup. So let me know if you agree with me on that one. There's so many great lines. I remember renting it from Blockbuster and watching it over and over again with my best friend, trying to memorize all of those great lines. But the iconic one that we all know is when Princess Buttercup is complaining about her sorry life, and Wesley chimes in and he says, "Life is pain, Highness. Anyone who says differently is selling you something." What a great line. And I was thinking today about challenges and obstacles, because my challenges and obstacles often can feel like pain. And I thought of that line in the movie as I was just flooded with all of the things that I need to get done. And some of them were things that I have been procrastinating for a week or more. And I was thinking that's how that line came to mind, that yeah, life is pain. Life is hard. I have to push myself to do the lingering administrative work that I don't want to get done, especially if it requires forms. I have something where I need to submit a certification that I have, so I have to find that in my laptop and figure out where I saved that. I have to learn some new tech that I cannot figure out for the life of me. I have to trim my dog's toenails. And for some people, those things I mentioned would be a piece of cake. It would not bring them pain. No problem. But to me, they're hard. A couple of them will actually feel physically painful because my stomach will be anxious about it and I just don't want to do it. Life is not only painful because of those great big things, but also just small, those day-to-day pains. We've all heard this quote because it's so popular, it's become cliche, but it's so true. Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. I said this in the last episode, which is episode 18. It's about living under pressure. I said I always knew that life included pressure, and it was sort of the expectation that as you move forward in life, there's more pressure, it gets more stressful, and it gets more hard. So we talked about that, but it's the same here, and it's the same with pain. I think that we know this from the earliest of our years. I once worked in special education, specifically in a school that is for kids that have emotional and behavioral disorders, and they cannot function in a regular school or a regular classroom. And so it's called Level 5, and all just filled with those kids from kindergarten to high school. And I also worked in Minneapolis in a high school just for kids that are, quote, Level 5 EBD. And, you know, those kids have stories. They definitely know that life is pain. But even if you had a kind of a basic, ordinary, not too eventful childhood, you know that life is pain. I've heard a few speakers use, like preachers or whatever, I've heard a few people use this quote, and I've also heard a comedian use it. So it's popular. But basically, if you grew up with parents, then you need therapy. And I'm a parent. I'm sure that some of my kids feel like they didn't get what they needed. There's no doubt. I like how author Mitch Albarn says it. I think he does a better job. He describes that all parents damage their children because it can't be helped. Youth, like pristine glass, absorbs the prints of its handlers. Some parents smudge, others crack, a few shatter childhoods completely into jagged little pieces. So, unlike Princess Buttercup, we all know that pain and hard times is a part of life. I grew up with a brain that did not make sense. I couldn't understand why I couldn't do things. There were things I couldn't do. And I'd look around me and I could see most everybody else, it looked like it was easy for them. And one thing is mental math. I could not do mental math. So I would try so hard, and then I would hide my fingers like a little bit under the desk and try to use my fingers to calculate as quickly as possible. But even then, I still would fail at the timed math quiz. I couldn't do it fast enough. I had no idea at the time that my brain was different. It was just biologically different. And that affected my working memory, especially with numbers. So for me, I mean, kind of a small thing, but not really. To me, a big pain. Math was hard. Math was hard. And then back then, in the 1970s and 80s, we didn't have the neuroscience, learning differences, ADHD, and especially putting that together for girls, you know, was not a thing. So I would get in trouble for being lazy or not caring, not applying myself, when in all actuality, I was the hardest working student in the room on those math days. I was working so hard. And did I care? Oh yeah, I cared, because a bad test score meant I didn't get to watch TV for 2 weeks. And when you're a kid and you're missing Dukes of Hazzard and Little House on the Prairie and the whole family's watching TV, that's a big deal. I knew life was hard. You knew life was hard too. You had your stuff. You have your story. You have your big pains. You have your lesser pains, the small pains, the everyday obstacles that you have to look at and decide. How much time and energy does this problem deserve? Because we have so many pains and obstacles and problems, even if we're not thinking about it, we're having to decide, how much am I going to put into working through this problem and dealing with it? Some people in the classroom, they were naturally gifted at math. So we all have those attributes, those talents, those traits that make some things easy and they're not a problem. And then to someone else, this is like the greatest hurdle to have to jump. We can't do some things very easily. And sometimes it's a limitation that you can't even get past, no matter how hard you work. You can try, and it's still going to be hard. So here's a somewhat unconventional, or at least for me in my life history, this was so unconventional. I didn't know this was an option. What if we are like, yeah, it's hard. It's hard for me. So what? So be bad at it. No, really, be bad at it. That did not enter my mind, that perspective. Or if it's something that's really important, it's super hard, it's a pain, we're not good at it, it's a weakness, but it's really important and it's only up to me. I gotta do it. Maybe I could be mediocre at it, or maybe I could be a little inconsistent. Rather than working and striving and pushing to be good, to conquer it, to master it. Perfectionism, it wants you to be good at it, master it, conquer it, or walk away. Me and my math story, I could write a book. There would be antagonists. Oh, I already know them in my mind. There would be plot twists. And it would be a book that would be hard to put down. I might think about writing it. Well, I'm not going to tell you the big story. I'm going to condense it. But math, like I said, was always hard. Many, many, many grueling hours practicing so that I could get a C, so I could have a life. If I didn't get a C, I didn't have a life. It was like, it's worse than TV. You don't get anything. Fun fact, I passed eighth grade math only because of extra credit. I went to a Christian school and the math teacher offered 1 point for every Bible verse that I would write down that had a math word in it. So really all I needed was a notebook and a pen and my concordance, a lot of paper, and that's how I passed. And then when I was in algebra, my exasperated parents, they finally paid for one of my classmates' mom, who was really good at math, I guess. They gave her like probably like $5 or $10. I don't know. This was in the 80s. So maybe $5 back then with inflation, what it is today, to help me pass algebra. Just pass it with a D. That was my goal. Not a B, a D. When I was in college, my boyfriend, who is now my husband, finally at 2 a.m. gave up and said, go to bed. I'm going to do your algebra homework. He gave up. I could not comprehend it. All right, let's keep moving ahead. Now, as an adult, when I was an adult, I did my kids' math homework alongside them. I did math with them because I wanted to learn math better. I thought I'm going to start over from scratch. I was homeschooling my kids. So from that time on, like, I'm going to do the math alongside. And I wanted to learn it. Well, I didn't want to, I needed to learn it. And in some ways it worked. My mental math is slightly better because I have some strategies that I didn't know about before. But I did get much better at algebra, believe it or not. I could understand some of the basic concepts of Algebra 1. In fact, I could do the homework all the way up through 3/4 of the way through Algebra 1. That's pretty great, but the thing is, I didn't enjoy math. So why was I doing this? Why was I taking my time to learn math again? Okay, it wasn't because I liked it. It wasn't because I had to do it so that my kids would do math. It wasn't because I would need to help them. Like the advanced math, there's no shot, but my husband could help them, or we could hire a tutor. The reason why is because I was being a perfectionist. I was demanding that I must work on my weaknesses because that's what perfectionism does. Being bad at it was not an option, and it did not sit well with me. I couldn't be bad at math. I could be, I knew I was, but it wasn't okay to be okay with it. If you were to take your phone right now and pull up Google or whatever search engine and type in work on your weaknesses, you look and see what comes up. I'll tell you, you might be driving, you might be busy. So I'll tell you, here's what comes up when you put that in. How to identify and overcome any weakness. Ooh, wow. How to work on your weaknesses without any stress. Okay, that's impossible. That's impossible promise there. 3 ways to overcome your weaknesses. Getting stronger is all about strengthening your weaknesses. And it goes on and on and on. We have been told forever that we are supposed to work on our weaknesses. Not gonna lie, some of those sound intriguing and interesting, and if I didn't know any better, they would grab my attention because I still battle that. I wanna work on all of my weaknesses. I don't wanna have weaknesses. But what would you say to me now that you know more about me? What would you say if I told you I'm gonna dedicate the next 6 months to master mental math, where someone can give me five problems and I can, or five equations, see the problem, five elements of an equation, throw numbers at me with pluses and minus, multiplication, divide. I can do it all in my head. I'm going to spend 6 months to master that. If I told you I was going to do that, I hope that you would stop me and be like, Carrie, you're bad at math and that's okay. Why don't you do something else with your time and your energy? Earlier, I said we have to decide how much energy and time that we want to put to things. All right, well, we're going to go back there for a minute because I want to share with you what I've been learning about, at least pull together and give you the gist of it, the gist of what I've been learning. So I want to share with you how weaknesses and hard things, things we value, time and God, how all that collides from the mind of a recovering perfectionist, which I am. I'm going to start, though, by looking at it in a way that it's true for everyone, whether you think you deal with perfectionistic thinking or not. Chances are you do if you're listening to this podcast, but for those of you who don't, this is true for you. It'll be true for you no matter what you do in life, how old you are. You could be a college student. You could be a 74-year-old lady really mad at me on the road, and this applies to you. Okay, first of all, let's talk about time. Every one of us has time limits that are very real. You cannot add time to your day. You can't. You cannot create time and put it in your day. You can become more efficient. You can become, more proactive. You can make space. You can open up time in your schedule. But even that is really hard to do. It's hard to take your day as you have it and be able to open up enough that it's a significant amount of time. I also think it's impossible to be a master of time, a master of time management, because so many things are outside of our control. And unless you're a very self-centered person, your time isn't completely yours. Not just because you're obligated and also you love your family, your friends, and unless you work for yourself, your time is not always yours. But a friend calls and says that she's feeling really lonely and wonders if she's depressed. What are you going to do with your time? Or a neighbor needs an emergency. She needs emergency childcare because she has to suddenly rush her mom to the hospital. Or you're feeling under weather, you need to take a nap, there's nothing you can do about it, right? So we can't master time. That's true for everybody. Also, we have hard things and pain. We cannot live with too many hard things, and we cannot live with too much pain. We're going to shut down mentally, emotionally, or physically. We have limits. We all have limits. And if you don't believe this, listen to the last episode. We have weaknesses. We all have them. I will list some of mine for you. I have, as I said, some weaknesses with my working memory recall, with sometimes finding the right word that I mean to say, or remembering names, or math for sure. Currently, my lower back is weak. I have weak lower back muscles, and that's been a pain. Okay, another weakness is, for me, keeping up on household chores, shopping for clothes. It's a weakness. No, I don't buy too much clothes. I don't buy enough clothes. I drive my daughter crazy with this weakness. Another weakness is I can react too quickly when I'm frustrated. I can just have this instant reaction. I'm weak with spatial puzzling things out. I'm weak in my business with marketing things. I'm weak at getting the mail. Okay, so you get the point. We all have weaknesses. Okay, now let's talk about values. Every single one of us, we all place values on different things with a different amount, a different measure of value on different things. This is so important. This one right here is so important, especially if you're a perfectionist, because you push past this part of you and you push it away when you're making decisions. But we all have values and it all impacts us. I know exactly why I'm bad at marketing and why that's a weak area, and it's so difficult and it's so painful for me. And it's because I value relational connection. That's why I like podcasting, although I'd rather be able to speak with you over coffee, but I so value that, and I so devalue transactional connection. Many marketing tactics are, or at least they feel to me, too transactionary. And so quite honestly, I know that this directly affects my coaching and consulting practice. So this weakness, it impacts me. I value cooking meals for my family. I value adventure. Well, you know, we all have limited time. And so if I value cooking from scratch, that takes up time. Therefore, some things aren't going to get done. And usually that's the household. That's some other household chore. So, but we all have things that we value that are maybe more like characteristics or ideas or things that we do. And values hold a lot of weight. I'm going to drop any task if a friend calls me. I will drop it. I have a friend and we don't live near each other and I miss her so much. Whenever she calls, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. If I see that call, I'm picking it up. I can't wait to talk to her. So we have to also, here's the other one. I threw God in there. We all have to deal with God. We all have to consider God and how we relate to him. What we believe about God impacts everything. So what you believe about God's demands on you, what he expects of you, his level of closeness to you, that's something that every person has to deal with. So I'm working myself on trying to be more aware and put together my own frame of how I think and how I respond to these things, because the way that I respond to it is going to impact a great deal of my life. So hold on to that for a second, because I want to give you some insights. I am a recovering people pleaser and perfectionist. So I'm going to tell you from this point of view now, if you're a perfectionist, this is how you might deal with time. You might think, if I have extra time, I can now do this thing better. Really get into that mastery mode. If I have just enough time, well, I will look for more time. If I don't have enough time, I'm going to steal time from something else. And if time runs out, then I'm going to feel really bad about it, and it's all my fault, and I'm a failure. So how a perfectionist will engage with hard times is an all or nothing mentality. Go hard or go home. Be all in or avoid it at all costs. Hard things can hook a perfectionist. It's like, that's the bait that's hard to resist. And a perfectionist would keep trying well past the point when many others would quit. And that seems like a good trait. It's a great thing. I mean, if you're working with someone and they bring on that perfectionism, it can feel very positive, but it goes into the dysfunctional world very quickly. Ask someone who works with someone who cannot quit trying. Like, they cannot quit. It's hard. They can't take a break. They can't ask for help. Even in the simple things, the perfectionism, you lose a sense of that human side of you that remembers, oh, you need to take care of yourself. You can't just go forever. And a lot of this comes from, maybe you don't want to fail others, but you also don't want to fail yourself. There's this sunk cost fallacy. I don't know if you've heard of this. I deal with this a lot. You've invested so much already that you no longer can tell if you're valuing it and it's important, and so that's why you're still pushing on, or if it's just because you've invested so much, is this still something worth fighting for? Okay, let's talk about the perfectionist and weaknesses. Weakness means something is wrong. We know something is wrong with us. We know everybody has weaknesses, but somewhere inside us, it means there's something wrong with you. It's not okay. You're letting people down. It could even feel like a moral failure when this doesn't have anything to do with morality. It's not a black or white. Values. Well, I already mentioned the perfectionist does not usually know what they value or hold it as important when they're making their decisions on how they're going to use their time, how they're going to use their energy, and how hard they're going to go and how hard they're going to push, and if it's okay to be bad at it. So the bottom line here is life is pain. We all know it. Life has hard things. We have things that we truly value, but we don't know what they are most of the time. And we have weak areas. We have stuff we stink at it, and maybe we just can't get better no matter how hard we try. We have an option. We have option A, which this is the path that I walked down for most of my life. It's the path of the perfectionist mixed with a little bit of stoicism and shame. And it's keep trying harder, do better, don't accept your weaknesses. Weaknesses shows that you're really a loser and you messed up and you're letting people down. In no way was there an option to say, okay, so what? I'm bad at it. So what? It went bad. Now, keep listening. Next week is going to be part two where we talk about the alternative path. I can't wait to share that with you. Thank you so much for listening. The best way that you can support this podcast is by hitting subscribe or like wherever you're listening to your podcast. Leave a rating and a review, and also send these out to your friends. You'll find links to all of the resources mentioned today in the show notes. Visit carriegoodman.com. On my website, I offer free resources as well as opportunities for group coaching, workshops, and soon-to-be courses, so check that out. Remember, it's for freedom that Christ set you free. Be yourself. Enjoy today. This world needs you. Till next time.